Hi, you're listening to the Full Life Podcast with Melanie Lynham.
It's designed to have a conversation with God. You're reviewing the day. I'll just give you one example of it. Sure. You review where did you see God's hands today? Like the magical, like, you know, like when you were late and you hit all the red light or hit all the green lights, mm-hmm. or when you left the house, but you remembered you forgot something important and you're only a minute away. You know, you mm-hmm. look at all the ways God intersected your day. That's just one example.
Christina is a working mom, author, podcaster, and Christian entrepreneur coach. She shares with us how she came to have a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus and the resulting persecution and relationship breakdowns that followed. I love how Christina says, even though there were difficult things, peace stayed with me. I couldn't turn back. Christina's journey is one that includes divorce, secondary infertility, adoption, single parenthood, and being a working mom and entrepreneur. In this episode, she talks about how to keep your business and parenting centered on Christ, clarifying your God-given purpose and vision for your life, looking after your relationships, and the importance of having godly mentors. This really was such a great conversation. So here it is, introducing Christina Weber. Hi, Christina. Welcome to the Full Life Podcast. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, thank you. I was just saying to you a minute ago that it's really bizarre to look at you right now on the screen because you're in daylight and I'm at nighttime. And right now for our listeners, we're talking from other sides of the world. I'm in Australia and Christina is in Wichita, Kansas, yes. In the United States. And so there's like it was like a 14 or 15 hour difference, wasn't it? So right now for Christina, it is 7:15 a.m. on Friday morning. And for me, it is 10:15 p.m. on Friday night. It's okay. You know, I've showered, I've had tea, I've got my caffeine, and
right.
I'm like,
I would be looking pretty worn.
Like, I can do this.
Yeah, I had the advantage in that one.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think I can do nights a bit better than mornings. Really? If I was if I was getting up for the 7:15, I think I might be like, I need like 2 hours to perk myself up. What time do you get up in the morning?
5:30. I'm a morning gal.
Wow.
I go to daily mass, and so I eat mass at breakfast.
This really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic. So then what time do you go to bed at night?
About 9:30. I'm in 8 hours and I realize that I have to have to have that. So
yeah, and your kids are at the age that they're not really waking you up at nine. How old are your kids?
My oldest is launched. She's 19. She's going into his second year of college. My daughter is 16. She'll be a junior in high school. And my son is 13. He'll be an eighth grader this year.
Okay. So teenagers. And so your son has launched and he's in the second year of college. What's he studying?
Pre-engineering.
Right. Okay. Is that something that he's always showed an interest in?
Actually, my dad was a psychologist. And when I was about junior in high school, he did a bunch of interest tests on me. And it was really helpful. So I did that with my son. He didn't even really know, but engineering was very high. So was being a lawyer, being an IT guy. And he actually did a little bit of a kind of an internship with his dad, who's a lawyer. Really, he didn't like being a lawyer.
Yeah.
But the actual work. And so really liked engineering. In fact, he was kind of that kid that wasn't turning in his homework, real smart, but just kind of half-ass doing his stuff. And when we did that interest test, it like jazzed him up, you know, like, oh, I could do this, you know, this is exciting. And so, yeah, he loves the classes and I think he'll do very well.
What a good opportunity for him to do an interest test at that age.
Oh yeah. I did it twice. My dad did it with me twice when I was about a junior, and then he did it again. I was about 25. I was looking at going back to grad school. My original degree is a business degree, marketing. And I was looking at getting my clinical marriage and family therapy license or clinical degree, master's.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to invest all that and not yeah, I wanted to get kind of reassurance that that's the right direction. And he did it again. It was very, very helpful both times for me. You know, you don't do the 6-year college thing when you have a clarity about what you want to do. So
absolutely. And so did that confirm for you, and you did go ahead and do that degree?
Yeah, it did. Actually, the feedback he gave me is he said, you know, you're not like your typical social worker kind of bleeding heart. You're kind of enterprising. I would have actually hated working in an agency, but I always worked in my own business as a marriage and family therapist. So it kind of combined, you know, the personal growth stuff with business. Yeah. So it was very helpful. You know, I would have probably disliked it tremendously had I been in an agency.
Wow, so you've really combined both of those. That's great. Well, tell us a bit more about yourself, Christina. Tell us, you know, who you are, more about what you do, and who your family is.
Okay. Well, I've got my 3 kids. I did practice as a licensed clinical marriage and family therapist for a couple decades.
Yeah.
And made a decision in 2008 to transition into coaching. And so it really was like a 10-year actual transition. It started really in 2010. And part of the reason why I did that is because, of course, we had the economic downturn. I work part-time here with my dad, so I have a much nicer office that I could afford. And, you know, he looking at his retirement, and then my kids were all going to get ready to go into school. And I wanted to do more full-time, you know, something more full-time. But when when the bottom crashed, the margins for as a therapist were very low, and you really couldn't make. And it's a one-on-one model, you know. I mean, there's only so much time that you can do it, and so I made the decision. And the other thing, I've always been very faith-based in my practice. I never worked for an agency. Here, you can't work for an agency and really talk about spirituality in therapy. And I thought. How can that not be about mental health? So
that's right.
So I never had to deal with that. So basically I made the decision. We were kind of moving towards kind of a single payer type of system where they could start dictating things. And I said, you know, the time's right to kind of make a switch. So currently, that took about a 10-year transition. So now what I do is, I took those skills and I use them now. I'm a full-time in the company I founded, Christian Biz Owners on Fire. I'm a Christian coach and entrepreneur consultant, and I work with faith-based clients, and I help them. They're really people who want their God, their relationships, their purpose in the center, and their business working around it. So if you've ever heard the term lifestyle entrepreneur, where you actually create your business around your lifestyle, you still give great value to your clients, but you organize it around that. And then I'm a Christian lifestyle entrepreneur. So I help people design their business in a way they're going to love the long term. And then during that time on a personal level, my spouse at the time, things came down. He actually filed for divorce. There were some pretty serious issues. So I was married 24 years, so would never have ever guessed I would ever be divorced, a single parent. So I became a single parent. About a year later, my dad passed away unexpectedly. So I had this, we did not transition. We planned to a degree, but it was not a smooth transition. So all of that happened. So, you know, I would have never imagined being a single parent and doing all this. So that was another part of me making the switch, is I just couldn't support myself as a therapist. And in this, what I'm doing now, I can. So, and I love it.
Right.
And, you know, I've been the other for 20 years. I was ready for a shift. So
absolutely. I'm so sorry to hear about your dad.
Oh, well, you know, it's part of life is death. So
yeah.
You know, kind of worked out the way it should. He's not the nursing home type.
Yeah.
And it happened fairly quick. And it's just kind of when it happens, it happens. So
yeah. How old was he?
He was 74. No, wait a second. 74, 77. So, you know, he was about, you know, a life expectancy really for me.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we, you know, and I really cherish the time we work side by side. You know, it was when I first decided to do that, I thought, well, how am I going to feel if I don't ever do this? And I never, and he died, and never got a chance to work with him. And it ends up, I worked with him over 2 decades. So,
wow. That's a very unique experience to be able to do that. I'm sure he was very proud of you.
He was. And he was very supportive. You know, it allowed me to have, I work part-time, very flexible schedule. I mean, it was a dream life, really. I mean, I did what I loved, kept my foot in the door in my career, able to do the stay home mom kind of thing. And it was beautiful. So
that's so great. And so you're, would you call yourself a Christian or a Catholic?
My business, Christian business.
Oh yeah, it is too. Okay.
I'm Catholic. I'm a devout Catholic, but
And so can you share with us your story of salvation? Like, how did you come to know Christ?
Okay. Well, and that's the thing, with Catholics, we kind of look at it different than Protestants as far as, born again, although I did have a born again experience. So I'm a cradle Catholic. I went to Catholic schools. I was always, my Catholic faith was always a real source of support and love. I had a multiply handicapped brother, and it was a very stressful situation. He had 27 surgeries over his life. Wow. He died at 27. So it was financially, there was a big impact. Mm. So that was pretty stressful. So I really had fond memories of my Catholic school experience and just the faith. Just allowed me to, you know, at age 5, I was asking questions like, why wasn't I the handicapped one? You know, these kind of.
Wow, that's deep for a 5-year-old.
Oh, yeah, I'm serious. And so it's always given me a very eternal perspective, you know, like a kind of a maturity beyond my years, having gone through that. So, you know, I always was pretty, I'd say in high school and college, kind of strayed a little bit, never really left the church. And then it was my junior in college when I kind of had my Christian born again experience. So I was in my sorority and I was, you know, I was really one of those high achievers. I got my attention from achieving, you know, when you have a multiply handicapped brother, they need a lot of attention. So you just are the good girl that gets stuff done. And I got accolades by, you know, achieving. So, but I'd really put myself in a real, real perfectionistic, put myself in this, you know, kind of pressure, like not living balanced, you know, just be pursuing achievement. And I remember I was picking up messages in my sorority and they had a speaker from, what is Christian group? I'm forget it right now, but Campus Crusade for Christ. They were there and they were presenting. They said, the world teaches you that your value is based on your appearance and your performance. But with God, it's who you are. You know, that's false. And that's the life I was living. I was living the life of my appearance, my performance dictated my values. And that's a house of sand, you know? Mm. And so I became kind of this holy roller, lost a lot of my friends. Lost my boyfriend, you know, and it was pretty devastating, but it really stuck with me. And it was kind of a price I was willing to pay. And it's been good. I mean, I'm still that way. I'm even within Catholic, I'm like a Navy SEAL of a Catholic. Over here, you know, of the whole, you know, when people say they're Catholic, there's a lot that means a lot of things. But I'm really devout, you know. Yeah. So that's my journey.
That's fantastic. And so, did you find much support when you became a Christian? Like you said that you lost a lot of friends, you lost your boyfriend, like that would have been really difficult. Did you have any time there when you just were a bit tempted to be like, this is too hard? Or
no, you know, it gave me such peace. It was hard. And I think that's the thing about being a Christian is we're not of this world, you know? So even now there's Christians being persecuted with things going on in the world that are very challenging. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things I've learned about being a Christian is when you're doing God's will, even if there's external things that are very difficult, you have peace.
Yeah.
And I always had, I have that today. I had it. So even though there were difficult things, the peace stayed with me. And so, yeah, I mean, I couldn't turn back. Like I knew, you know, and really what's beautiful is that the people that you attract when you're really surrendering your life to God are such, they're more authentic friendships. They're more authentic relationships, the partners you attract. And so you don't really miss the super, I didn't really miss the superficiality of the other. It just wasn't satisfying.
Yeah. Did your family notice the difference in you?
Yeah, you know, I would say it created division in my family. I don't separate like I was Catholic and now I'm Christian. Catholic is Christian, but I think I was more devout. Like my mom left the church. She got into New Age. She's still out of the church. Hostile towards me and my faith has been, we don't have contact now. I have a spiritual director and he described it as I do experience persecution in my family. You know, again, my dad died, he was going to daily mass, but there was a period of time when he was in a relationship, and I challenged him on some things as an adult, and he actually disowned me. I wouldn't introduce his girlfriend, live-in girlfriend, they weren't having sex, but they were, and I said, Dad, my kids aren't going to understand it to my children.
Yeah.
And he disowned me. So
how long?
It's kind of a brutal story. She ended up dying, but,
I'm sorry to hear that.
We reconciled, but you know, it was emotionally devastating, but it's an example of, it was an example of, you know, who am I serving? Am I serving God or am I serving being people pleaser, being liked or having things go smooth? Do I want, you know, everybody's living together. Do I want my kids to see their grandfather living with his girlfriend that's going to daily mass? You know, no, I'm not going to do that. You know? You know, so there was a price. But again, I always had that peace. I mean, it was painful. I'm not telling you it wasn't. And it really did really change our relationship after. And once something like that happens, it's like, but it's still, to me, I can't turn back. I can't not be all in with God. So, and there are prices to it.
Yeah. I love that you've counted the cost and you've taken up your cross and you've followed Jesus, no turning back. And not everybody experiences persecution to that degree, that personally, and you certainly have. And you're... 16-year-old daughter, she is actually adopted from China. Would you like to tell us about how that happened?
Well, we had our son and we experienced secondary infertility. And I just had one sibling and he died at 27. And I just love the thought of being open to life. I mean, I feel like the best gift you give your kids are siblings, you know, it's, and so I really wanted to have, I was sad about the thought of having an only child. And, at that time, now it's changed now, but, we discerned the option of adopting in China or from China. So we did, make that decision for various reasons. And, it was great. We brought our son, with us and, my daughter, you know, it's interesting, you know, how God, I'll tell you this really cool thing of how they match you with your kids. The Chinese believe that the eyes are the window to the soul. And they basically, have you take a picture of you and your family, and then they look at the kids and they match the eyes.
Wow.
They have people that this is their job.
Wow. And
she could not be more well suited. When I think of her, I'll start crying. When I think of her as a daughter, we are so different, but she is just such a blessing. I call her kind of Dr. Spock. I don't know if you ever watched Star Trek.
Yes, but
she's really analytical. She's not super emotional. she could, you know, she wasn't that drama girl in junior high. She just would observe, this is happening, you know, very yeah. comfortable with herself. I was the one that was worried about being popular and just totally different. Yeah. And really, she's very smart. She wants to be a vet. She just, you know, I just can't say enough about how well of a match she and I are as mother and daughter. We have wow. a really good relationship. And particularly when I don't have a very good relationship at all, that's good, or even a relationship with my own mother, to have that as a mother-daughter is amazing. I mean, it's amazing to have that. So it's interesting how God works. And now when you see what's going on in China mm-hmm. and you see the religious persecution and, you know, I even realize, oh my gosh, I'm so glad she's not there. We ended up starting our process and we had her within a year and a half.
Great.
Shortly after, it's a 7 to 10 year wait.
No.
Yes.
What changed?
Well, it became very popular. One of the things that's popular about it is typically those kids don't have attachment issues. They don't have drug in vitro issues because they're basically healthy moms that would love to have them, but it's the one child policy. Now it's the two child policy.
Yeah.
So they live on health, you know, and that was a factor for us. I mean, I'm a therapist and I know what having a kid that's had in utero drugs or abuse the first 2 years and major attachment problems. I mean, it's a handful. I mean, it's a missionary. So that's part of the attraction was, you know, that you get a, you know, a child that for the most part is healthy. And our older son, by the way, is special needs. He's profoundly deaf.
Wow.
And he wears cochlear implants. So that was part of it. We didn't want to have another child, like a super high need attachment disorder kid. You know, with having his thing we were dealing with. So,
yeah. So how old was your daughter when you adopted her?
She was 15 months.
15 months. Oh, still a little baba.
Yeah.
That's
she
a
was
cute
amazing.
Age.
She walked around, she fed herself, they ate vegetables. I mean,
it's great.
I mean, I was like, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah. Already trained. Yeah. But then about 3 years, well, there's a 3 year age gap between your daughter and then your next son. So you ended up being able to fall pregnant again?
Yes. And this goes back to the Catholic thing. You know, we don't believe in artificial contraception. So one of the things that at Vatican II, they don't expect Catholics to have a bazillion kids. So they encourage doctors to come up with moral means to regulate births that work with your body that are natural. And so there's a doctor here in town, or in Nebraska, actually a state above me, Dr. Thomas Hilger. So he designed, there's different models, but a natural family planning model, but it ended up being very diagnostic. So by studying your own cycle, basically the belief is that infertility is a disease state. It's not a natural state. It's not something just to work around. It's a signal something isn't working. Mm. And so what he's done with the natural family planning, where you basically chart body signals to know when you are fertile, when you're not fertile. So if you want to conceive, you're having intercourse when you're fertile, and when you're not wanting to conceive, you abstain from that when you're fertile. And but basically, he created a diagnostic model. So you could do the charts, you send them up. For $25, he'd identify what the problems are. So he came back to me. He said, I think you have the potentially polycystic ovaries, a thyroid problem, maybe endometriosis. So he recommends a treatment plan. I got the thyroid stuff fixed. He did a laparoscopy. I had a lot of scar tissue from my oldest son. That was what was blocking. And I had polycystic ovaries.
Wow.
And so just his procedure cleaned that up.
Yeah.
We conceived. And then when I got pregnant with Benjamin, when you get pregnant, it naturally cures polycystic ovaries.
Wow.
So I got on thyroid medicine. So it's a beautiful example of when you work with your body instead of doing weird in vitro or, you know, these kinds of things that are unnatural, that it does work. Your body is designed to conceive. It's, you know, it can heal itself when we work with our body. So he was my Dr. Hildreth's baby.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I'm so happy for you that you were able to fall pregnant that third time and overcome those obstacles.
Yeah.
Okay, so fast forward, you're now a Christian business person coach, and you help people to keep Christ at the center of their business, as well as to keep relationships a focus. Yeah. And you also have your own podcast. Could you tell us a bit about your podcast?
Yeah, you know, I started that when I made the coaching transition about 10 years ago. I had a coach that was very encouraging to do a podcast, and I kind of went through different niches. I started out with working with Catholic mompreneurs, but where do you find the group of Catholic mompreneurs?
Yeah.
You know, and so then I moved to Christian women entrepreneurs, which was kind of in the better direction. Then Christian Biz Owners on Fire work with men and women. Mm-hmm. So during that, I always had a podcast, and I it evolved, but it was I was kind of in the same mode, but just kind of clarifying my niche as I went along. And in 2016, January is when I rebranded Christian Biz Owners on Fire. I kind of branded it more to men and women, not just entrepreneurs, but all kinds of business owners. And so I really recommitted to the podcast. There were times when I would, because I felt like no one was listening. You know, I didn't know how to, and to this day, I'm still just getting started on learning all of that. I'm not technical. I'm the visionary person. I'm not the ones that gets all, that's just not my gift. So, I recommitted. In fact, one of my mentors had us kind of a podcast kind of a thing, and she helped me see that part of the value, and this is a great example, is not just who's listening. It's the relationships you build with your guests. And I mean, I have unbelievable guests on my show. I mean, this has been really fun. I mean, I would have never known you had you not had a podcast, you know.
Yeah.
And it's so I realized it wasn't just about listenership. It's about the relationships you build. And it's also about clarifying yourself as a thought partner and a thought expert in the world. And I realized I'm actually building a community. I'm kind of, a community of Christian business. There's a hunger for that as people, and I'm drawing them to me. So the podcast is a natural means for that. It's of just connecting with really, because people reach out to me to be on my podcast. I mean, I'm booked through December. I mean, and it's July or whatever. So
yeah, it's fantastic.
It's a marketing standpoint, Christian and business is a very hot job because it's niched well.
Yeah.
It's something we're committed to. And in the last year, I made the commitment, okay, now we're going to get this out other places, and we're doing it slow, but, I really see it as a winner. I love doing it. And, I think it's important to have a strategy. For my strategy, it's really, the secondary strategy is to be an influencer. Because I realize there's Christians doing cool things, and if I'm building a platform and I can get the word out about what these different things, businesses or Christians are doing that would interest that community, that's a service.
Yeah.
But from a pure business standpoint, what it is I have a limited number of space for clients, 20 clients. And when I have someone come open, I'm not full at this point, but when I get full, I'm going to be full fairly quickly. I want to be able to say, oh, have an open slot. Boom. You know, it's kind of a marketing thing of just, I want to have a faucet I can turn on and turn off when I'm ready to have a new client. And that's the other part of it from a business standpoint. So.
Yeah. So you're very clear on your vision and also your capacity and your lifestyle, as you said, building your business around your lifestyle.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing why I love podcasts. You know, I have three kids. I'm a single parent. So I either have my kids and I'm pretty kid activity stuff, or I don't have my kids and I'm working, you know. And what I find is that trying to go out and do public speaking is really pretty stressful. I don't mind speaking, but as far as random scheduling and, you know, wherever, whereas a podcast, you can do it like I do mine at the same time all the time. You know, This is pretty convenient for me. You know, I'm not having to go someplace. I'm on Zoom. So as far as a practical matter as a podcast, it's a very practical way to quote unquote speak and be visible in different audiences.
Mm. So what are some things that you do or that you encourage your clients to do to help keep their businesses centered on Christ?
Okay. Well, I'm a big one on it's not what you're doing in your business or your life, it's who you're being. And so part of who I'm being, I have this pretty pretty detailed routine every morning of spiritual practices I do. And it, to me, it's essential. I mean, it probably takes me about 3 hours, quite honestly.
Wow, great. And
I'm efficient. Like I listen to podcasts of the daily readings while I'm putting my makeup on. I go to daily mass. I spend about a half hour in quiet time in prayer. Once a week, I do kind of an extended Bible study. I'm involved in an accountability group once a week. So to me, all of those things are essential for me showing up to my clients. I see my job as I'm God's instrument. You know, I need to be a pure vessel for the Holy Spirit. So if I'm out of tune, if I'm in fear, if I'm distracted, I'm taking away from what I offer clients. And so if I start my day and just get rolling and don't do those things, I feel it. I mean, I'm just not present. So to me, that's a big part of it is just having those spiritual practices and structure in place. And for myself, it's understanding I am doing a disservice to my clients to not go into my day fully grounded in Christ and in prayer. I mean, in the sacrament. And it's a responsibility that I take seriously to my clients. Not that I never have it happen, but I think that's the key.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. Filling up your cup so that you can pour it out.
Yeah, exactly. It makes the same day when I do that is manageable. If I don't do that, it feels like my day's out of control. It could be the same day. I just feel completely. Now I do also do like a night examine. That I, you know, review the day at the end of the day. And I've actually, part of what I do with clients, some of my high-end programs, I actually have created special planners to help people keep Christ first. You know, it has actually the St. Ignatius Daily Examine in it every day. So there's things I actually incorporate my own stuff for myself. So I'm doing throughout the day, in my own business planner or whatever that I use. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So did you say Ignatius Daily Planner or Ignatius Daily Exam?
There's a St. Ignatian Night Examine.
Okay.
You can just Google St. Ignatius Night Examine, and it's a process for kind of wrapping up the day, reviewing the day, having a conversation with God, and having a resolution for the next day. It's wow. Really kind of a beautiful process. So
is that it's something that you do like after you've done your bedtime routine, you're sitting in bed and you're about to go to sleep?
You can, or if you want to do it a little sooner, you can. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to be hard to squeeze it in, then yeah. So it's what I like about it. I used to do a thing where I would kind of have the things I'm working on, you know, to be a more virtuous, develop virtue more or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it would be this checklist. And I'd try to review that at night and I'd be like, I would dread it. I did, you know, it felt like a report card, you know, it was a very, and I stumbled onto this St. Ignatius Night Examine, and it's designed to have a conversation with God. You're reviewing the day. I'll just give you one example of it. Sure. You review where did you see God's hands today? Like the magical, like, you know, like when you were late and you hit all the red light or hit all the green lights, mm-hmm. or when you left the house, but you remembered you forgot something important and you're only a minute away. You know, you mm-hmm. look at all the ways God intersected your day. That's just one example. I mean, how often do we not acknowledge all of the abundance that we're getting all the time, all the blessings? Yeah. So that's kind of one of the first steps of the St. Ignatius or whatever. So Yeah. You know, it's just a spiritual practice that's extremely helpful.
Excellent. And so do you sell any like daily planners on your website?
No, I did create this. I have a high-end program. I have two programs. One is my entry levels faith-based revenue boosting boot camp. Mm-hmm. And so that everything I do is all about vision. I help people really clarify what I call their Holy Spirit inspired vision. So we look at, and because I'm a therapist, everything's on the table. You know, a lot of coaches just talk about your business, but I mean, it all blends, you know, I mean, how can you only look at one area? So we identify their vision. And what I do mm-hmm. with my clients is I basically help them reverse engineer it. So that's what I do with my low-end clients. So they may be people that have been in business for a little bit, but they're needing to bring money in. You know, that's the key. Yeah. You got to have money coming in to have a real business. So, or they've had a business, but they've been, you know, never had a mentor. It's never been very intentional about how they've been planning. So those are my like boot camp. I call my boot camp clients. Yeah. And then I have a whole other level. Are you familiar with manifesting?
I've seen on your website that you've got a booklet that talks about that, but I'm not sure what manifesting means.
Yeah, it's really hot in the coaching world. And what it is basically the word itself means bring into being. So you've already got the idea. Like, for example, your lifestyle and your business, you've got the idea, but manifesting is making it actually concrete. Like this office mm-hmm. at some point was an idea, and now it's actually a place I'm sitting in. So So people think of it as being new agey, but it really is referenced in the Bible 31 times. The way I explain it to my faith-based clients is that we're created in the image of God, male and female, but God isn't male or female. He doesn't have a body. He's a spirit, God the Father. And so masculine energy is linear. It's 2 + 2 = 4. You need that to build buildings. You need that to balance your books. Even a male's body is very angular. Okay. That's how they think. Feminine energy is very circular. I mean, look at our bodies. We're very rounded and circular. It's 2 + 2 could be 10. It could be relationships, synchronicity, timing, intuition. That's feminine. They're both from God. So manifesting is more of the feminine side of how to get things, how to achieve goals. So I was naturally really good at that, and it's very effective. What I realized is that it's very science-based. It's based on neuro-linguistic programming. It's based on the way our brain is designed. It's based on our cognitive and emotional processes and how they work together. So it isn't just woo-woo, you know, weird stuff. It's actually quite science-based. Wow. So I was fascinated with it. And at the time, I needed a little 2 + 2 = 12. I was telling you some of those challenges I was dealing with. And so I just became a student of this. And no one was really doing it overtly Christ-centered. It was spiritual, but not really specifically Christian. And so I basically applied this personally. And one of my coaches is a really good manifester. And when things kind of went down the way they did, which was fairly positive, she was like, wow, you are an unbelievable manifester. You know, you need to do this more with your clients. So I kind of already was, but I ended up long story short, I created a whole program, and my target is really men, 45 to 55, already successful, happily married. They're growing spiritually, but they want more. Like they want to grow, but like they can't walk off and not pay the mortgage. You know, I mean, they've got responsibilities, but they understand the manifesting, but being male thinking, masculine thinking, they're like, I know what you're talking about, but I have no idea what that is. So basically it's very techniquey. So I do the same thing with the boot camp. We reverse engineer their vision, but then I have two other layers in my high-end program, which is I have a video series and that teaches people how to manifest. And when you asked about handouts and stuff, as part of that, it's a weird mix of it's like prayer, personal and professional development, and even couple enrichment, because you can manifest as a couple. It's ideal for that. So I have a lot of handouts with that at that course. And then I also do another layer in that program. When you're manifesting something really big, you need to tap into your why, your purpose, on a much deeper level. It can't just be, well, I want to balance life and I want to earn this amount of money. It has to be like, what's your purpose? Like, Why were you created? How does this affect the world as in general, what you living your purpose? So I kind of pull my therapy hat and help people with that. So yeah. As a part of that high-end program, I've created extra resources. So I don't really sell those to just anybody because you kind of need to be trained how to use them to really make it work.
I see. Yeah. Okay, great. You'll have to excuse me because it's 11 p.m. and I'm gathering my thoughts, but I just remembered my next question. You also talk about wanting to help people to keep relationships a big focus of their life as well, and looking after those relationships even with the busyness of a business. So how do you encourage people to do that?
Well, I think you want to look at your vocation. That'll give you very clear, and you have different vocations, but like if you're a mom, if you're married, if you're single, those will give you clues into your purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm a mom and I have young children and I think I need to be traveling the country every week speaking and I'm not taking care of my children, there's a disjoint there. Okay. Yeah. So we always want to go back to, there's a season for different things and there's more than one way to skin a cat. So when you have your relationship, and most people don't look at their relationships like they do their business. You know, we have business goals, we have financial goals, we have goals on our health, we're going to lose weight, but we just are haphazard about our relationships. We don't really think. And the way I would say it is you want to approach it too. I mean, there's a different, you don't barrel into your relationships like it's a business thing, but you want to know where you're going. Like, what kind of adults am I raising? I'm not raising children. I'm raising adults. What do I want them to be? How do I want them to function in the world? What kind of quality? So you need to be thinking about when you're raising your children, what the end game is. What are you trying to produce here? What fruit are you trying to create? Same thing with your marriage. Like, what kind of marriage do you want to have? What kind of other friendships do you want to have? How do those look? Those need to all be a central part of your habits you do every day, your planning that you do. It's just not going to happen. You know, it may haphazardly happen. Some people do that, but most of the time you kind of just get what you get. And it, you know, if you came from a super healthy family and everything was really, you probably produce that because that's what you're used to doing. You're just doing the habits you saw. But if you came from a family that was some brokenness or divorced family or people that left the faith, that's what you know. And that's it, unless you change the habits or change the patterns, you're going to likely reproduce that. And so that's really what I do. It's just I help people really think, what do they really want and how would that look?
Yeah, excellent. What is one scripture that you're holding on to at the moment, Christina? Something that's helping you perhaps with your business or your life personally?
Yeah. Well, probably two, but they're both in
two?
Proverbs.
Fantastic. Yeah. Give me both of them.
Yeah, I love this. I started studying Proverbs this year and it's great. Proverbs 10:22, the blessings of the Lord brings wealth without painful toil for it. When you really are aligned and your whole focus is on serving God and others, I mean, that's the primary motivation that you, I mean, even if you have to work at that, like you're normally selfish, but you're trying to work on it. It really does become effortless, you know, producing wealth. And then the other one, because I still have kids at home and Proverbs 22:6, train a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. I guess what I realize is when my son graduated, you know, it's like you go from this intensity of you're always doing stuff with kids and da 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 da. And quite honestly, when they leave, it's fast, unless they're staying there living with you till they're 30, which was not my vision.
Not the plan.
No, but you know, it's such a short time. It's such a short time. And if you miss the boat, you don't get a second chance. You know, and I feel, you know, I'm not thrilled about how my marriage ended up, but I really feel great about the focus I did on my kids. You know, I just, that's such a comfort. So that's why I really don't want anyone to sacrifice that or think, oh, I'll deal with that later. You know what? Later, they're going to be gone. You know, later they're going to be in high school. And if you haven't done the things you need to do, it's quite challenging to try to do it when they're in high school or middle school.
Yeah. I read that the first 5 years of a child's life are just like so important for building the foundations. It could be telling them stories, reading to them and singing with them and playing with them every day. And I've got a 6.5-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 2.5-year-old, and a 7-month-old. And when I read that, I thought of my 6.5-year-old. I was like, it's too late. Didn't do enough. Have I ruined her for life? And then I thought of my 4-year-old. I was like, I still have a year.
And you can get really hung up about that. But the deal is, part of it's because you're creating brain pathways that last a lifetime. And, you know, I think a lot of people are kind of hard on themselves. Like, oh, I didn't do it. You know what? If you're just acting out of love, if you are trying the best that you can. I made a ton of mistakes with my kid. You know, there wasn't, obviously in my marriage, you know, there were mistakes. So, you know, but the thing is, I think it's, if you, in your heart, you're doing the best you can and you're willing to grow and you're willing to learn and take it more seriously, you know, God takes those loaves and fishes we give them, even though they're inadequate, and he feeds 4,000 people with them.
Yeah.
You know, kids are very resilient. You can be you don't have to be perfect to produce great kids.
That is an epiphany. You do not have to be perfect to produce great kids. That is quotable.
Well, and the thing is, if you're perfect, it puts pressure on them. You know, like my kids, they were calling me out on, you tell us to get in the car and blah, 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 and you take 10 minutes to get in the car. And they're right. And I said, you know, that's something I need to work on. It is inconsiderate for me to do that. You know, it lets them see they can make mistakes. Yeah. Nobody's if you have a perfect parent, I mean, I'm glad our Pope, you know, our first Pope, St. Peter, denied Jesus. What if we would have had this perfect guy that never did anything wrong? And, you know, he screwed up big time. You know, it's like, but he said he was sorry. He repented and he got back on track.
Yeah.
That is comforting to me.
Yeah.
And that's what you're doing as a parent when you are imperfect, but you admit when you make mistakes, you take ownership and you constantly try to improve.
Yeah. So how did you go when your eldest son did move off to college? How did you cope? Were you okay?
Well, it was complicated because of the divorce. My ex-husband filed when my son was a freshman, and that was tough because that's a normal age when boys kind of gravitate. They move away from their mom. So like up until about 12, boys are like all about their moms, but then about 12, 13, they're all about their dads till about 25.
Okay.
So it was a natural time when for him developmentally to pull away.
Can I just clarify for a second? Sorry. Being in Australia, we don't know. Well, I don't know what a freshman is. What age is that?
A freshman is 13.
14. Oh, okay. Thank
you. It's the first year. Yeah, right. You probably do school different. So it's, if you look at school as 12 years from age 5 to 18, a freshman is about 13.
Okay, then. Right.
So thank you for clarifying that.
That's all right. And so your husband and you separated at that time?
Yeah, he filed for divorce. Yeah. So we separated. So it was he was starting high school. I mean, it was even his first year. He was at the age where he was already naturally pulling away from mom. It's appropriate. Yeah. And then, of course, we're going through a divorce. Mm-hmm. And it was tough. And well, I'll tell you what the blessing was, and this is how God provides. I wanted to get the kids in counseling right after he filed, and I thought I could, because I thought we had a custody thing where I could. He legally blocked me from getting them in counseling. He said, "Well, they're not wetting the bed. They're not." And I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" He's an attorney, so he threatened it. And I could not believe it. And so what happened? My oldest son was. so depressed. I thought I was going to be suicidal. And I, by the end of the summer, I said, please let me get him in counseling. I said, I'm concerned he's going to maybe commit suicide. And so anyway, he agreed to do it, but only with this one counselor. And that counselor was an angel. Fantastic. He ended up, what happened was he ended up working with my son. He worked with my daughter. He helped us negotiate our kind of parenting agreement and stuff. He's always been in our lives. So to answer your question, how did the launch go? Had it not been for that psychologist mm-hmm. who helped me co-parent in a very difficult time with the uncooperative other parent,
yeah.
Ian would have been a mess. Because like when Ian wasn't turning in homework, his dad wasn't really enforcing stuff. You know, he could have been a kid with a 2.0. And he already had challenges with the deafness. I mean, I didn't. And because of that psychologist kind of acting as like a guardian of our son, it allowed me to kind of gave me some support to be able to do some stuff. So by the time he graduated, he wanted to live with his dad. Well, he went to college, but then the COVID hit and he went back home and he wanted to live with his dad. But because of it, it was his, you know, I don't have the cool house, you know, dad got the house. And, you know, I mean, I totally get it.
Yeah.
And I learned how, you know, to kind of let that go. It wasn't personal. It was like, I would hate to go back and forth to two houses. I totally get that. And in fact, it was that psychologist and learning how do you have it kind of like I just said about the vision. It's like, okay, he's an adult. How do I have, what kind of relationship do I want to have with my adult son? And I want to be connected. So what I did was I called him every week at the same time. Sometimes he wouldn't take my call because there was a lot of kind of manipulation going on and confusion. Okay. And I called consistently, and then I started inviting him to lunch. You know, I learned a lot. I asked people, like, how do you launch effectively? One of my guests is a parenting expert, and she said, you want to keep it positive. You want to, you know, you don't want you. And I have a spiritual director, and he said, you know, up until 18, you teach with words. You don't stop parenting once they're older. It's just you do it with example and you do it with prayer. I pray for him daily.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm here, I'm available. I try to be a good example. And you know what? It's paying off. He went from kind of blowing me off, you know, mm-hmm. that first while to now we're starting to do a thing where we're going to lunch as a family. He's an adult. So I'm not saying you have to go, but hey, we're going, we'd love to have you. He's starting to choose to be with us. This weekend, right. We're going on all of my kids and I and my significant other, we're going on a weekend to Kansas City. And again, it was his choice. You know, he could say no. I mean, he's an adult. You know, he doesn't have to go. And I learned if you don't know how to do something, ask someone who's done it well. You know, I did not launch well. Mm-hmm. You know, so I asked people and I applied what they did. You know, I asked the psychologist, how do you deal with adult kids? She said, well, you just check in, you find out what they're doing that week. You know, I don't know how to relate to a son. I've never had an 19-year-old son, you know, as a mom.
Yeah.
I said, you just check in, see how they're doing. You know, I had to ask because I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I applied it and it worked.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you received good advice.
I did. And I do feel like that's from God. He puts people in my life. Always. He puts people in my kids' life. They were both in Scouts, Boy Scouts. So they had wonderful male role models. And I had another spiritual director say, you want to make sure they have really good male role models. Mm-hmm. They've been blessed with that.
So you have spiritual directors. And you have friends who are psychologists or connected with...
Because I'm a therapist, so I do have some friends that are...
Yes, it sounds like you were surrounded by good advice. Your spiritual directors, are they like deacons or pastors? Not pastors, but the equivalent to pastors.
Yeah.
Within your church, or how do you find a spiritual director?
Well, and again, this is kind of a Catholic thing, so I don't really know how Protestant, they may have more of a mentor or disciple or whatever, but specifically a spiritual director. Mine is a priest. I'm in a group called Reinum Christi, which in Latin means Christ's Kingdom.
Okay.
So I've been in it 18 years. My son was 6 months old when I started it. We meet weekly.
Yeah.
And this group is a group of, we support each other to live our baptismal promises. So we support each other to grow in faith and to live our vocation. So part of this group is they offer spiritual direction. So this priest is kind of affiliated with this group, but you don't have to be in a group like that to have a spiritual director. Yeah. So the idea of a spiritual director is it's not therapy. It's not counseling. It's not coaching. They are there to help you be a saint, help you grow in virtue, help you improve your relationship with God.
Yeah.
So they ask you questions, they give you guidance, and it's been invaluable. It's been invaluable.
Excellent.
And I've done a lot of counseling. I've done a lot of, I have a therapist I see regularly. It's kind of an ongoing relationship. I have other mentors. I'm a big believer in that, especially because I don't have connection to my earthly family. My sibling, my dad are dead. My mother and I are estranged. So I feel, you know, God has filled in with other resources. So it's been really healing. I mean, he helps me see things from a totally different vantage point. And one of the things, like for example, he was the one that said, "You're being persecuted in your family." I had not ever thought of that. I'd never seen it as being persecuted for my faith. Mm-hmm. The thing with my mom is I will not say her doing the New Age deal is equivalent to being a Christian. I mean, she wants me to say that and I won't. So she's like this weird competitive thing. I'm holding my ground. I don't judge her. I mean, it's just, I don't agree with that. You know, it's fine if you want to choose that, but I'm not going to endorse it, you know? The other thing he said that was so helpful that I had not thought of before, because I'm embarrassed about the sex scandal in the church. I'm ashamed of it. You know, that it's just horrible that this has happened to people and you know, I can see why people would look at the Catholic Church and go, you know, I totally get that. And I've talked to him about things like that. And he said, "We have no idea. God did not intend the world the way it is. It was through original sin, the evil that was unleashed. And because we're in it, we don't recognize how bad it is." But he just said, he just gave me very concrete ways to handle that. Of just, you hold on to one hand with Jesus, and again, we're Catholic, so you know, we rely on the Blessed Mother, and you just let God guide you through it. But we are in a spiritual warfare, and we're in a spiritually dangerous world. We really are, and it's really because of original sin. And when I was able to hear it like that, it makes me not be mad at people that are doing things that are wrong or hurtful. Sin hurts people.
Yeah.
Hurt people hurt people. And it just helped me have more compassion, like even for my mom, you know. It just helped me to just understand, you know, she's being tricked. She's hurtful or different things. And it's because she was hurt. And that's because of sin. Other people's sin on her. You know, her own sin, my sin. I hurt people when I sin. And I guess it just those kind of shifts. I've been a therapist for 25 years. I've done a lot of personal growth, but I've never gotten that kind of perspective.
Yeah.
And that's been really helpful.
Yeah, excellent. So there is definitely there is value in having spiritual directors of your life. In a Protestant church, perhaps we might call them mentors or pastors, maybe life group leaders, just people who you admire in the faith, who give you godly wisdom and advice.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous to have people that are not godly giving you direction.
Yes. Yeah.
And I've kind of bumped up, because I'm pretty open about getting outside help. And I don't believe, like, I think part of what Christians do is sometimes they don't take advantage of the good resources that are non-Christian, but you have to be careful. You know, I ran into some things with some coaches that I realized at one point in my work with them, I said, you know what, their compass is going in a different direction than mine. And it really, it was a useful process because I started to see when you work with someone long enough time, you start to see the behaviors and the stuff that the uglies that maybe people don't see initially or the costs of it. And it's like, whoa, you know, this is what happens when your compass is not set on the right thing. And it's dangerous. So you have to, you know, I'm doing a study on all the verses around money. And God talks a lot about going to Egypt. You know, he had Joseph and Mary go to Egypt. Well, Egypt represents the world. And there were different times Abraham was told to go to Egypt. Egypt, at times, going in the world and learning how they do stuff or being there for protection, sometimes God calls us to that. But he always calls us out of that. He didn't keep them in Egypt. He brought them back to the promised land into their... And I see it like that, is we want to... It's okay to learn and stuff, maybe from non-Christians and things, but you got to realize there's a danger and you got to recognize the danger and know when it's time to leave Egypt and come back.
Yeah, there's a limit to how far you can go.
Yeah, there's a limit and there's a time and season for doing that. I really needed to learn how to do the business world. Yeah. You know, I'd been this therapist, stay-home mom, you know, Pollyanna from Kansas. You know, the hard knocks of business.
Yeah.
And I needed to go into Egypt to get kicked around a little bit so that I can really advise my clients on the real world. The real world is Dorothy and Toto and the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. Far from it. Yeah. Okay. So we're coming to the end of our conversation, but before we go, I would really love to finish with a couple of fun questions.
Okay.
Let's just say that we're in the same time zone right now and we're going out to a cafe for coffee or tea. What would be the beverage of your choice and how do you have it?
I like a skinny latte from Starbucks, but it's interesting. I drink a hot tea every morning, and I learn from the gal I get facials from the importance of using collagen. I'm 54, and, you know, you start to lose your
life. No way. Yeah. Okay, well, you're looking very good for 54.
Okay, this is a tip, collagen.
Okay, listening. I'm listening.
So, she said, you start losing elasticity. So I started putting collagen powder in my tea, which was fine. And then when I went to my facial place, the gal said, oh, yeah, we have another kind, and it also has greens. And so you get not only the collagen, but you get like ground up greens, which are really good for you. So I started using that. That's like drinking oil. It's awful. So I'm like, I mean, I drink it, but it's like a penance.
Yeah. And then you get your skinny latte.
or just the regular one without the greens in it. I mean, so it's funny.
Is the collagen one yucky as
well? No, the regular collagen's fine. It's when you add the greens, it's like, it's kind of like the idea of wearing high heels. They look good, but they really don't feel that good.
Well, that's a good tip. That's two good tips. Okay. And then also, what are you listening to at the moment and what are you reading?
Okay. Well, I'm reading a couple books. One is The Dynamic Laws of Abundance by Catherine Ponder. Awesome. I'm really a big manifester. I love it. It's been great.
Yeah.
I'm also reading a book of a guest who's going to be in my show. She sent me a copy of her book, Getting Naked Later by Kate Hurley.
Oh, wow.
It's a new book, but she's been single and I don't know if she ever got married. I never read it. I'm still reading it, but it's a part of like kind of the trials of being single. I'm feeling pretty good. I'm not, but it, you know, there's a compassion for people who want to be married that are single.
Yeah.
And she kind of really, she's a faith-based person. So I'm going to interview her. As far as what I'm watching, in fact, I wanted to watch your podcast. As I'm getting on different podcasts, I'm like trying to listen, but I couldn't find it. So I'm going to
catch you
later.
Yeah.
How to do that. But, but I will tell you, have you guys heard of The Chosen?
Oh, yes. I just got onto that. I'm up to the third episode.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Some friends tipped me off, and I'm watching one episode a week with my kids.
So good.
I love The Chosen. Yes. It's almost like a meditation. I mean, it gets better too. We're on episode 7.
Yeah.
And they're going to do, I think that they've got the funding now for year 2.
Wow. So what it is for our listeners who don't know what it is, it's an app that you download onto your phone. And then through that app, you stream. There's season 1 that's out, and there's 8 episodes of, basically it's like the story of Jesus choosing his disciples. And it starts with Mary Magdalene and her being delivered. And honestly, just the way they do it, it's so impacting. It's really realistic and impacting. I just love it. And it's all crowdfunded, isn't it?
Yeah. And they're really doing a series on Jesus and his apostles that'll go on. And they took a lot of care in developing the characters. I think what they did is they looked at it's scriptural, but there's lots of things that aren't in scripture, but other documents or historical documents. So they really do such a great job of developing the characters of all the different apostles and followers, you know, that you hear about, but it's just so powerful. I mean, it's really helped my meditation of the gospel, just kind of picturing the scene. And it's been fantastic.
So good. Excellent. Before we finish, do you mind if I get you to pray for our listeners tonight?
Oh, absolutely.
Today?
Yeah.
This morning? Yeah. Okay, great.
Yes. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for letting Mel invite me to be a guest on her show and be in front of her tribe. Please bless her and her ministry and all of those other people she's serving to really inspire them on what is good, true, and beautiful, and help them really move towards living that full life that you want for us, the abundant life that really is a light to those who maybe don't know you as well or are not as connected with you. Really, you shine through us through that abundant life and the happiness and peace that comes from submitting and surrendering our life to you. So I thank you so much for this opportunity. In Jesus' name, amen.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you know somebody who would really benefit from listening to this episode, then click on the share button and send them a link. Also, I'd so love it if you could take the time to quickly subscribe and write me a review. If you want to get in touch for any reason, DM me on Instagram @Mel_Lynham. Talk to you soon.